Hello.
Hello, Adam.
Good evening, Adam. Evan, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So, Evan Matthews.
Adam Martin.
We are M2, and this is the newly rechristened Mythmakers podcast, where we will talk about all things creative,
mythical
production, building.
It's become a Greek myths podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Deep diving into Orpheus and Eurydice and Theseus.
So if you're still listening, we rebranded and created some new cover art, which if you're already a subscriber, you'll see newly kind of refreshed in your feed.
Yes.
So just to say what that's about a little bit. So, you know, we realized that, you know, this show, although it will certainly continue to be oriented around the work that we're doing, we also wanted to have room to grow into some other areas and to ultimately be about the creative process as it relates to storytelling in general.
Exactly.
That will continue to be about us, but over time may also include other people that we're working with Macroverse, with other projects.
Hey, Willington, the idea is to certainly just broaden horizons and really talk about this process.
Exactly. You know? So just to have this show really be about the kind of everything around the business and creative process around creating stories in all kinds of formats.
Yeah. Very exciting.
So yeah. So welcome to Mythmakers.
Indeed.
So cool. So Adam, what's the week been like for you?
Week's been good. So we had my assistant directing work, we kicked off week one of Future Man.
Yes.
Which was very exciting.
Shooting.
Week one of Future Man. So I got home at 4 a.m. I think 4:30 this morning.
Yes,
having shot lots of night exterior work Friday night, and this is very standard. This is very standard. If you are shooting nights,
yes,
night exteriors, you tend to do them on Friday nights because you can then recover over the weekend and be ready to go again at kind of 7 a.m. Monday morning.
Now, just in terms of the production of filmed entertainment. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, if you were to do that during the week, there's a certain number of hours that are required for turnaround time, so you would be coming in very late the next,
exactly.
The next day as well.
So, yeah. You know, you are, it's specifically the actors. Screen Actors Guild has a kind of mandatory 12-hour turnaround period for the cast. And so, exactly. If you shoot until 5 o'clock in the morning with one set of actors on a Wednesday, then you can only really come back in at 5 o'clock p.m.
the following day
if you're using those same people.
Yeah.
Which just poses problems, obviously. So you kind of try and keep everything early, and then if you do have night work to do, you do it at the end of the week.
Yeah.
You know, this was actually better than most, and this time, as those of us that were around for the opening season last year, we kept... Because so our second day of filming last year, we had a 4 p.m. call, and we shot until 4 a.m. and then we shot until dawn Thursday and Friday, shooting a riot between cops and bikers and a gigantic battle sequence on the streets of the West Adams district. You know, there were kind of a handful of us that were kept going, oh my God, do you remember this time last year? We had like 50 people fighting each other on the street, 3 people walking, and it was altogether more civilized.
That would be more concerned for anyone that was like, no, I don't remember that.
That's very funny. But it's great. It's been lovely to get back and up and running with this again. And it's the, it's probably actually a topic for a different thing, but it's been very interesting for me in the last year going to and fro between kind of network comedies and then the harder edged Hulu and cable stuff.
Yes.
And the differences between the two, both in approach and in content. It's been interesting.
That is a good larger topic. Yeah. What a quick encapsulation of that, just having brought it up, what would you say in a soundbite is sort of the...
You just, obviously, fundamentally, you can get away with so much more in cable.
Yes.
And so...
Not a lot of swinging dicks on the...
definitely not.
On the network side.
Definitely not. This will become...
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
If you've seen Future Man Season 1, then you will know that there is a penis swap that takes place between two of the major characters.
Which I will say is one of the funniest things I've ever
seen.
It's
incredible.
On the show.
Yep. I do. It's one of my favorite lines from last season was, give me back my dick, you cock pirate. Which, out of context, may seem strange, but when you see the show,
it's hilarious.
It is, and it pays off in the most amazing way.
Yes.
with a fight between two variations of Josh Hutcherson. Hutcherson, sorry. One with this colossal penis and one without. which is, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
Yes.
Very, very funny. And so, you know, that's, you know, I think you can, yeah, you just get away with so much more, and you can push the boundaries so much more on the comedy, and you can allow the actors to play when you get talented cast who can then kind of take what's written and expand upon it, and the writers can have much more free rein in terms of going where their fancies take them, and it's great.
Yes.
It's just great.
Yeah.
Without being concerned about advertisers, which is obviously the major thing that networks have to deal with, is upsetting the brands that pay a lot of money to have their ads on the network.
Yes.
Now, it's funny because we have issues the other way occasionally with brands who absolutely refuse to have anything to do with a show of this nature. And then other ones, funnily enough, that are like, no, that's great. We're quite happy to be involved with this.
You like, know, Coke, so it's just, no dicks. Yeah. Pepsi, love dicks.
Exactly. So, no, very funny. Yeah. But it's great. It's been really nice to be back. It's a wonderful family in the sense of kind of returning home to a show that you kind of loved in season one and loved producing for all the all the stress that was involved with season one. It was great. And
well, I'm sure, I mean, just from our offline conversations and you know, having known you for a while, I think you know, my take on it, and you know, you can tell me if I'm crazy here, but it's like, you know, there's a rigor and a sort of I don't know what's quite the right word here, but it's like, you know, there's something that is very fulfilling about the craziness of knowing that you're doing something that you actually feel good about the likelihood of a good result at the end of, regardless of how crazy it is. And I think, you know, I certainly can map that onto our other work as well, but it's like, no matter how frustrating or, you know, kind of hectic things get, like when you know you're doing something that feels like it's going to be good.
Yes. And boundary pushing and all those things. Exactly. I mean, it's you know, I think that was, you know, it's rare, I think, that you do get to do a show that is truly unique.
Mm.
And I do feel like Future Man is that show.
It is.
It looks unlike any, pretty much looks like unlike any other show that's out there. Anyway, and then you add the fact that it's a comedy.
Yes.
And it's so far outside the box for that. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yes, very exciting.
And a geek's delight. Oh, a geek's paradise. Oh,
the number of Easter eggs in there for every possible thing is just fantastic. Yeah. So, that has been good.
Very cool.
And then you've been obviously very busy on the M2 front.
Very busy this past week. I'll start on a more personal note. This may be a bit of a TMI, but I also had my first manual prostate exam this week. So I can say I've never appreciated how slender my doctor's fingers are until this week.
That's funny.
So, you know, prostate cancer runs in my family, and we've done it all with blood tests up to this point. And she was like, well, it's about that time. And I was like, okay, then. So, yes, there you go.
Yep.
On a work front, if you manage to be in Los Angeles at a Lemley Theater this weekend, you will have seen the version of the first Lemley short that we have produced in the series of Lemley shorts that we're doing. So this one is heavily Field of Dreams based, and it will be playing in theaters this weekend, and we should be able to put it up online within the next few days as well. So
it's a lot of fun.
If you check out M2.Ninja, that'll show up there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But very cool. So basically, we're kind of 99% done with it. They put it out to test audience reactions over the weekend, and then we might make a few final tweaks based on kind of what that reaction is. But lots of fun, and then kind of going headlong into the next series, which is great.
It's a lot of fun doing this kind of stuff around movies that we love.
Yes, it is.
I remember sitting in here kind of a year or so ago, kind of brainstorming, oh, it would be cool if we could do this.
Yes,
the lamb could do this. They could do this. And, you know,
there's a,
it's great to see that stuff.
Minor spoilers, but there's a very, one of my favorite bits that will be coming up is a Silence of the Lambs reference.
Hannibal Lambs?
Hannibal Lamter, as I'm calling him. Dr. Hannibal Lamter. But it's, you know, so the I don't, I mean, it won't ruin anything to hear ahead of time, but it's basically you've got Lambs talking in the movie theater, you know, not being respectful of the other lambs who are watching the movie, and the other lambs start to glare at them, and then all of a sudden,
and then one of them eats his liver.
With fava beans,
yeah, exactly,
and a nice
candy. Exactly.
but a Hannibal Lecter mask gets shoved onto the lamb's face, and you get this very surprised reaction from him as goes shh. So fun stuff coming up there, and then lots of writing this week as well, which has been good.
A lot of fun.
Some great meetings. You know, we're expanding. I think we may have mentioned this before, but expanding our partnership with Mammoth Media, who does the Yarn app.
Yep.
So great meeting with them this week, and kind of figuring out, defining what the next projects are going to be. Can't really announce much of that, but we can say that the second season of Dead Town on Yarn
is coming up shortly.
Very soon. Yeah. So we're actually doing a few tweaks on the first season, so we'll get sort of a remastered first season, mm-hmm. which will then lead into season two within the next few weeks.
It's very exciting.
So we'll have more to talk about there, and then we've got another two seasons after that plan. So I have a total of four seasons of Dead Town coming up on Yarn. Some other projects coming on there too. And then, you know, we're looking at some very interesting ways to collaborate with stuff that will work both in the Yarn format and in our Macroverse format, and ways to kind of do stuff in both places that, you know, kind of create a richer, fuller experience when you're actually using both platforms. Right. So lots of fun there. And, you know, that stuff I just get really excited about because it does feel like an opportunity to, you know, kind of flex those storytelling muscles in interesting and innovative ways.
And I think that's that's part of the fun of it, is getting to tell stories in ways that have hitherto been unavailable.
Exactly.
And quite genuinely, which is great.
And then on the Macroverse front, we are days away from launching the next version of the app. So this will be version 1.6 coming out. And the two big things that we've been working on, one is building in a stronger analytics system. So this is more of a back-end thing. You know, users won't really see this, but what that gives us is a way to be able to start to, you know, see more data around how people are using the app.
How they respond to stories, what they like, what they don't like, and what turns them off, what keeps them going.
Exactly. Kind of and so from our perspective, that's really the most important thing for building in that analytics system, is we want to be able to see where are people falling off, if they're falling off, so that we can start to respond to that creatively.
Exactly.
And make things that, you know, really
we resonate with an audience, and that's important. And that's what's fun. It definitely, obviously, it's important from a business perspective as well.
Yeah.
But it's also creatively, we want to make sure that we're delivering something that people actually want to see. And that this is part part of the tool set that allows you to do that.
Yep. And then the other big feature coming in 1.6 is push notifications, which will also allow us to communicate with users more effectively and let you guys know, you know, when new episodes have come out, when new series are launching. So just kind of giving another system to let us, you know, communicate with the users and readers of stories on the app, and ideally solicit additional feedback and that sort of stuff as well.
Exactly.
So good stuff there. And then in the meantime, we've also been continuing a bunch of different creator conversations. Mm-hmm. We actually signed up two more series this week, actually three more series over the past week and a half.
Yep.
And then a couple of bigger announcements, hopefully forthcoming shortly with some name creators as well. So lots of fun stuff coming there. We don't know for sure yet, but we're looking at the possibility of having some stuff ready for Comic-Con in July. So we're starting to kind of figure out.
Becomes the push and how we do that. Yeah.
Exactly. So figure out what that looks like. If you are coming down to San Diego, it is looking more and more likely like we'll be there at least for one day, or at least I will be there for one day. Adam is celebrating his in-laws' 50th anniversary.
Of course. Yes. They very, very inconsiderately scheduled their 50th anniversary 50 years ago on this day.
Yes.
So yes.
But that should be interesting and fun as well, and kind of a good chance to talk to more people. And I think, you know, it's interesting being at this stage where a lot of what we're after is this sort of back and forth conversation with creators, with users, with partners, with, you know, all this stuff as we continue to build out the app. In other Macroverse news, we are talking to what could be a new business partner for the app, who we've worked with a bunch in the past and has a bunch of experience building digital companies and video game stuff. And so you know, working with him on kind of what that would look like and kind of figuring out how that all comes together, which looks great as well.
Yes. Very exciting. Just to be able to expand this thing and make it as cool as we know it can be.
Exactly. So lots of fun stuff. And then in the Dead Town lockdown world, we have held back on launching episode 8 until we push out this new version of the app. And so if that goes out in a couple of days as expected, then you can also look to towards episode 8 launching either this week or next, depending on what the timeline there is.
The joy of tech development.
Yes, exactly.
This is, great, we can hit these goals. And then, we can't quite do this. Let's work out how we can do this.
Back to Startup World. But episode 8 is a very exciting episode for anyone who's been watching. We introduce an element of the world which you have not seen yet. Mm-hmm. We'll start to... I can't wait to see what people's conjecture about why it is the way that it is, but there really is a reason. And we're very excited to see what people's reaction to that is. And then we're in the midst of writing the rest of episode 9 right now, which actually wraps up season 1of Rise,
exactly.
This particular story arc. So there'll be 4 seasons in this arc.
Yep.
And that'll be interesting and exciting. So wrapping this one up and then headlong straight on into season 2 as well.
Exactly.
So lots of writing. We finished writing season 2 for Yarn. We were earlier today breaking the rest of the story or episode breakdowns for season 3 and into season 4. So good stuff, and then
all good stuff.
Lots more all around that.
That actually leads us very nicely into
this week's topic.
What we wanted to just talk about a little bit this week, which it's something we've kind of touched on before, and it was actually kind of brought in the sharp relief this afternoon as we were breaking, seasons 3 and 4 for Yarn.
Yeah.
For the Dead Town story there.
Yeah.
And as is our wont, backtracking slightly.
Yes.
So there was a fantastic podcast that Eben found with Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg being interviewed by Tim Ferriss.
Yes.
That he had sent me from a couple of years ago now, like 2015, 2016, I think. Mm-hmm. Hearing them talking about their creative process and the fact that...
It's a good one. So I mean, the Tim Ferriss show in general is a recommendation, is a ongoing Hujima flip. That episode particularly is great for those of us who are entertainment and creatively inclined.
Incredibly inspired, because it was great to hear. And I think especially important when working with partners. Hearing Evan talking about, we have a big game, big buck hunter get console in the room and we walk around and I'll do yoga and meetings and having had meetings in those offices, I'm like, yes, he does. He walks and like sits on a ball on the floor and puts his leg behind his head. It's very, very funny. And absolutely right. And it's great. And obviously the creative juices flow in that environment.
Yeah.
It was funny for us this afternoon. I think it was what kind of put into stark relief and just, I think, made it a topic we discussed was my 10-year-old son was with us hanging out. My wife and daughter being up in Santa Barbara right now. Yes. And just running a half marathon.
Yes.
So it was just the kind of, just the boys. And he was around while Evan and I were discussing the remaining seasons and how to break them and what we were going to do and how this would work and all that stuff. And it was funny because at some point he stopped and said, wait, so all you do is sit around and talk about talk about stuff and say, well, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. Like,
yeah,
pretty much. Yeah. There's structure around that, there's a lot more involved with that, but I was kind of walking around. I like to play with a rugby ball when I'm thinking. And so it's like, Edward and I will trade off. Like sometimes I'm typing and he's pacing and sometimes he's typing and I'm pacing. And today it was like, he was typing and I was walking around playing with the ball and I was throwing the ball to him from a Kyler and it just, that physical movement definitely kind of keeps things flowing for both of us, I think, which is cool. But it was very interesting hearing that, what you do is this.
Yes.
And it's like, yes, fundamentally, that's exactly what we do.
Yeah. He's like, that's so easy.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, yes, my logic is. And you're doing it within the kind of creative parameters or stories of structural parameters that then can create a compelling story and hit the notes you want to hit to keep an audience engaged and build the characters. And what are the arcs doing? What's, mapping the various characters' arcs and how does this work and how does this play into what they want and how we go? And all right, we know we need to hit, your classic 3-act structure is, you kind of establish the problem you're solving in Act 1. Act 2, typically things are going well and then things go really badly. So by the end of Act 2, you're in kind of slump.
Yes.
And then Act 3, if it's that kind of story,
yeah,
things pick up again and kind of work towards a positive denouement at the end of Act, at the end of Act 3.
Or some type of resolution.
Or some type of resolution, exactly.
Yes.
Not always positive.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, there's famously, you know, in comics in particular, there are famously some writers, Mark Waid in particular, who's a longtime prolific, you know, kind of Marvel, DC and everything writer, and is actually the editor-in-chief at Boom in their early days. But you know, he's kind of famous for having talked about, like, he'll actually approach a lot of his work without a plan, which I think is amazing, because he'll essentially write himself into a corner and then force himself to figure out how to write himself out of that corner on a, you know, kind of ongoing basis, which is horrifying to me.
Terrifying.
To me, it's like, I think what I love about our process is that it's very much macro to micro, right? So it's very much like, what's the overall story that we're telling?
Yeah.
What's the logic of how this thing all works? You know, kind of the fundamental kind of like, people are doing X, Y, and Z, which means that, you know, these other things have to happen. And, you know, that means that, you know, that like, this all has to make sense in a sort of logical progression. And then once we have that figured out, then we can start to think about, okay, so now each individual character, you know, what are they doing in the context of this stuff? And what's the arc for each character? Exactly. So it's like, kind of once all of that is figured out, then we can kind of go back and say, okay, so now on an episode by episode breakdown, you know, what's happening in each episode that delivers that, you know, sequence of events that gets us to those different points that we know we need to hit.
Yeah.
And then we get more granular from there into like the specific beats of each episode.
Yeah.
And then by the time we sit down to actually write a script, it's a relatively straightforward process. And to me, that's where the creative part of it actually comes in, is it's like this roadmap is all laid out.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of just let the characters and the dialogue kind of flow within the structure that we already have in place. And so to me, that's where it gets fun, is like, the writing is fun because those things have been worked out. And so part of what we were doing this afternoon is actually, you know, after meeting with Mammoth, there were a couple of notes that they gave us, which were great notes and made a lot of sense. And, you know, especially part of the reason for retooling season one a tiny bit is sort of, you know, how it ties into the rest of the series. And so, you know, kind of looking back at, okay, how are we going to do that? And how does that fit in? And how do we tweak a few things in the existing episodes? And then how does that lead into the next episode? So again, kind of revisiting the logic of the whole series. And then, you know, like, after that meeting, I had made some notes about like, oh, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And then this is what I love about, you know, working together, is it's like, I'm sure I could sit there and just, you know, rack my brain or go for several walks or runs or whatever and kind of find some of those solutions. But I always know it's going to be better if we can kind of spitball it and talk about it and, you know, kind of work through that together.
Yeah.
And now having done that, it's like easy to go and write those scripts.
Go and do the things. And another part of it, and I think there's two, and then there's two other things kind of KBS to that process, is that obviously we do like to be grand, and we do like to work backwards from kind of macro to micro, which I think is by and large works very, very well.
Yeah.
And when you start to deal with the micro, you realize, oh God, hang on a second. Fuck, this doesn't actually make sense. Yes. This character wouldn't do this.
Yep.
Which means actually this thread that we have now running through the story doesn't make sense if this is happening for this character.
Yep.
So now we have to go back to the, like, follow the logic of that thread through, and then rework the macro to make sure that
absolutely
logic is
it's a back and forth process. And I mean, you I think you mentioned this on last week's show. I mean, there are times also where, you know, the best thing that can happen when you're writing is that the characters kind of take over and you're kind of the conduit to what they're doing, as opposed to trying to force something. And there are times when the characters go, oh, you thought we were going to do this, we're actually going to do this instead. And then you go, oh fuck, well now means this has a bunch of implications for that initial structure. Or, you know, as we're getting into the rest of the script for episode 9 on Dead Town, you know, it's like, I've actually tried to go in and write the next couple of scenes 3 times over the past week, and there's just something about that which just isn't working. Clicking. And it's not, in this case, I think the structure is sound, but there's something creatively about how we had been thinking about executing on that, which isn't quite working. And so after this podcast, actually,
we're
going to
be
talking
about
that.
Exactly.
And so, you know, but again, it's like, I know, like, talking through it will solve that, and then it'll be easy to kind of dive in and write those last few scenes.
And then the other thing that we do while we're breaking this stuff is, you know, once we know that the structure of sound and the basic beats are in place, yeah. as we're writing the kind of detail breakdown,
mm-hmm.
we're tossing lines of dialogue to and mm-hmm. fro, and we're saying, oh, it would be funny if this said this, and this line's kind of funny, and hey, you know what, let's try this. So that, you know, it's kind of in the detailed notes, yeah. there are lots of actual dialogue that'll end mm-hmm. up, you know, being kind of 80% of what's on the page. Yeah. And, oh, you yeah. know what, this would be cool, this line's funny, this line's great, this works.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got all this, these elements that you then, yes. all these ingredients that you then put into the sauce.
Yes.
And by and large, it seems to work. It
works so, yes. quite well. Yeah. And,
So
two things that are related to that from that interview with Seth and Evan, and I'm curious if there's anything else that stuck out to you, but the two things that really stuck out to me, one is, I think Seth talking about the way they think about this stuff is there's the story,
mm-hmm.
there's the plot rather,
yep.
and then there's the story.
Yes.
And the plot is the sequence of events that happens. Like yep. these are the things that happen. And then the story is what are we actually saying
yes.
as writers, as creators with this thing that yep. we're writing. So the plot is like, you know, X plus Y equals Z over yep. the course of the entire thing.
Well, Z is you the know, rest is of the Z, world.
Correctly. The rest of the world. One tiny island in the world, as it might be said, that also uses use in their armor.
Yeah.
So I thought that's a great distinction to think about. Mm. You know, it's like there's the sequence of events is not necessarily what you're trying about. To say as a writer. What
exactly.
You know, what it's about. Exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing, which I thought was really interesting, and I think we do this to various degrees, is, you know, they talked about what they've found over the years that's been very effective for some of their most successful projects is not even worrying about trying to capture the early ideas, but just talking about it a lot.
Yes.
And that the things that stick are the mm-hmm. things that are kind of useful over a period of time.
I think it was funny because I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. There was one that was very interesting to me that, mm-hmm. you know, they talk about stuff and they talk about stuff and then they're like, wait, if this idea has, you know, they'll kind of fill notebooks with ideas. And yep. if this idea keeps coming up,
mm-hmm.
then it's probably worth
it's
pursuing.
Probably a good one.
And those
yeah.
other ideas just kind of evaporate, and yep. that's probably right. a good, there's probably a reason for that. And we're hearing yeah. Don Simpson, the now, obviously, ex-mega producer from yeah. the Come yeah. Simpson Brookhammer days,
mm-hmm.
Apparently would just, you know, have notebooks full of kind of logline ideas
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
that he would just have scribbled down.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd be like, oh, hey, now's the time. Well, this is the right person. This is the right place. That mm-hmm. now this idea can be developed. And then yep. they'd bring writers in and then they'd go from there.
Yeah.
And I think that's as evidently insane as Don Simpson yes. was. He was a brilliant producer.
Yeah.
And, I think that was obviously very effective.
You know what my version of that is? There's two things. One is, and this would be a mini pre-Hujima flip for me, is I have discovered an app which we're actually using right now to record this show called One Record.
Mm.
And I have it on my phone, but more importantly, it also has an Apple Watch app version. And so I actually use it on my watch more than I use it on my phone. But I'll find, you know, for me, I think I've mentioned this before, it's like a lot of, especially, it's interesting, a lot of the story solving stuff happens for me when I go for runs or walks.
Yeah.
And so,
another thing that Evan mentioned on
yes,
the podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Being told by Snoop to go for walks.
Yes.
very, very funny.
So that definitely works for me. And I find, you know, having that quick access on either my phone or my watch, it's like I can, you know, be walking around or just randomly at the store or whatever and just have an idea and just punch the button yeah. on this device and just quickly, you know, say
that's
it
great.
into the phone or into my watch
mm-hmm.
and then it's captured. And often just the fact that I've done that, I don't even have to go back and listen to it. It's just
you
that
just,
it's set
in there.
Now in
yep.
there. And then the other thing is we use a piece of web software called Basecamp, which also is on all of our devices for project management. And so we have a kind of master, you know, kind of project
mm-hmm.
idea, you know,
yes.
list on there. And so there are also times when it's like, you know, earlier, either I think yesterday, it's like just after this meeting with Mammoth, it's just like a bunch of yarn ideas kind of just kept
yep.
coming to me. And so I would just pop into Basecamp and go like, you know, quick, this one,
yep.
just very quick kind of overview concepts.
Exactly.
And then we can look at those and some of them will get developed and some of them will never be developed.
Exactly.
But it's like just a way to quickly capture those ideas.
Yeah.
And then again, sort of, you know,
it's always funny being on the other end of those because, like, I'll be working on something, my
yeah.
phone's like a ding, 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 ding. I work up and it'll be like five different things. Oh shit, Evan's, something's hit it. Inspiration is struck. Clearly, it's great. It's very
yes,
funny.
Exactly.
No, it's great.
So I think, you know, I think the key takeaways for me, you know, as far as breaking story is, I think it's important, you know, so you have that great idea, and then it's working through that idea to actually figure out, is there a story worth telling here? Is there something that you want to say here? And then what are the beats of the plot that will start to communicate
propel that forward? Yep.
And then kind of working back and forth between, you know, what are the beats of the plot versus, again, sort of what's the story that you're trying to tell?
Yes.
And then going from there into the more kind of specific breakdown of the beats of that story, and then figuring out the characters within that story. And then the characters largely dictate a lot of
then
that.
Then that'll dictate
in that, you know, it's like we've said before, and it, you know, anyone that's kind of looking at writing, you know, you want your characters to be the thing that's driving the actions in the story. So it's the contradictory motivations between characters that create tension, that create conflict, that create, you know, kind of the action within that.
And that especially when you're writing for television or any, or comics or any kind of longer format. Obviously, it's important in movies too.
Yeah.
But especially in the, when you're trying to tell a story over
a longer period of time,
seasons, you know, it's the conflicts that drive the story. So a lot of what you're doing when you're first establishing this is, what are the points of contention between these characters? How are they going to get around each other? What's in the way of each one from getting what they want? And if that's another character in the thing, so much the better.
Exactly.
Because that sets up a compelling story.
Well, and that's, you know, it's one of the things, you know, we you know, Dead Town is a great example of one that's been around for years, and we've done a ton of talking about, and some of that stuff has come back around, and some of that stuff's been,
and probably, you know, a lot of it actually hasn't.
A lot of it hasn't, actually.
I think probably more than 50% of it has gone the way of the dodo over the last five years.
Well, I think what's great about it is, you know, I think the core concepts have remained, but but the story that we're actually trying to tell has evolved dramatically. But it's a good example to me of, you know, I think at this point, like, we have a very, very good handle on, you know, here's our main character, and this is where he is and what he wants and what his evolution is going to be over this long-term series. And then here are these, you know, other supporting characters.
Secondary and tertiary characters.
You know, here are the things that they're trying to do, and that just creates natural conflict and stories and arcs for all these different things that we're trying to do with that series.
Yeah.
And so it does, you know, it's once you get into that flow and into that zone, the actual process of writing and creating those things almost becomes sort of, you know, natural and you know, it just it's you've got to sit down and take the time and do it, but it's, you know, it's much easier than one might think once all that groundwork has been laid.
Exactly. And I do think, you know, that's definitely where, obviously there are plenty of people who write by themselves.
Yes.
But I do think it's one of the best parts about working with a partner is doing that together. I
mean, yeah.
It's some of the most fun times we ever have. It's
absolutely.
Like sitting there and having had a couple of cocktails and kind of pace walking in circles and often my living room. Well, like, hey, we can do this. No, that doesn't work. Let's try this. How about this? What about this? Like, nah, that doesn't quite work. How about this? It's, it's great. It's this kind of organic flow.
Great.
It's so much fun.
Absolutely.
So much fun.
Yeah, so break some story. And, you know, if you're so inclined to do that with us, we'd like to talk to you about that as well. So
exactly.
We're going to make our weekly reach out to creators on the back of that.
Yes,
so
please.
We are, as we mentioned, talking to lots of creators from Macroverse. If you have not downloaded Macroverse yet, we cannot encourage you enough to do it. Both on iOS and Android, you'll get to read through episode 7 at this moment of Dead Town for free. Episode 8 launching shortly, and then 9 shortly beyond that.
9 to complete the first part of the story.
And more to come after that.
Indeed.
New series coming over the next handful of months as well. So definitely jump on board. But if you are a creator, we are very interested in the types of stories that you might like to tell in this platform, in this format. And you can reach out to us at action@m2.ninja.
Yep.
And we are absolutely looking for ideas, pitches, concepts, you know, things that would work in our format and that have kind of multi-platform potential and appeal. So, you know, we look at our role in this part of the process more like television showrunners than anything else, but we, you know, we want to work with you to help people, you know, kind of realize their dream projects, things that they haven't been able to create yet, or that, you know, just haven't quite found the right home for, or that you just get inspired by the opportunities in the format. So, again, we're excited about working with with potentially you, but yeah. interesting creators and interesting projects across all genres and formats. Yeah,
exactly.
So by all means, reach out. And then I guess that brings us to this question, Adam.
The hoojama flip.
What is a hoojama flip?
The hoojama flip is, you know, whatever's, I can't remember the name for it, the precise verb that I don't know about. So maybe I'm a hoojama flipping the hoojama flip. Yes. What would you be?
What is my hoojama flip this week? So
touched on it earlier.
Yeah, so, you know, mine this week, there have been a few cool things. I mean, I can on a more kind of, traditional entertainment side, really loving the season of The Americans, which is really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Last season.
So, you know, three FX shows I've been, you know, just really loving. So Americans, Atlanta continues to be fantastic. And Legion. For 2 weeks now, Legion is just blowing my mind with every episode. But my actual hoojama flip this week is a music video called This Is America. So this is Donald Glover, who also goes by Childish Gambino as his musical name.
Alter ego.
Yes. But it's pretty fascinating. It's pretty intense. It's pretty riveting stuff. And
it's a stunning
story. It's a phenomenal. I mean, yeah, exactly. Musical poetry is a good way to put it. It's entertaining, but it's also very confronting in how, I don't know, the word that comes to mind is accurate, but it's really just provocative in the notion. It's very confrontational
portrays,
in the best possible way. And it's, you know, it's like there's a lot going on. I definitely come away with the feeling that there is not a frame that has not been considered and doesn't have an intent behind it. It's one of the most purposeful things that I've seen in any media.
It's also a beautifully designed, just from a kind of directorial logistical perspective. Like it's beautifully done the way it touched. Obviously every frame is perfect, and it's these long single takes that then mesh together that tell it's a powerful story.
And it's just, I mean, it's dripping with subtext and meaning. God. So worth several watches. I also, you know, went into a slight deep dive after watching it a couple of times with various different people's interpretations and kind of, you know, analysis of kind of the different points of view that other people's reactions to it have solicited. So it's interesting not only to see the video itself, but also to kind of look at what some of the commentary around it is. And I think a lot of it seems very on the nose, and some of it may or may not be the case.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty interesting moment that Donald Glover is having right now. I mean, this is a very powerful piece of work, which is clearly coming directly from him.
Yep.
Atlanta is his show and has a lot of, interesting context around it as well. Right. You know, it's phenomenally, you know, well-written and produced and great series, but it also has definitely got something to say. And then you've got him Lando Calrissian in a couple of weeks as well. So if someone's having a moment, it's that guy.
Oh my God.
Well worth a watch and well worth a little thinking as well.
Yeah. So, no, it's excellent. Yeah. We just watched it tonight and it was it's powerful, genuinely powerful stuff.
So again, This Is America. Just search it, you'll find it.
Yeah. Love it, love it, love it.
And yours?
Mine, actually. So it's funny because this part of what's led to the conversation about story structure and whatever else. So my son has become hooked on Lost in Space, the new Netflix show.
Yeah.
Literally last week, and he kind of finally, it was like, great, you have to watch this. And he goes so excited to watch the pilot. Actually, with both Evan and I. And we watched it. It was very interesting because it definitely looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a ton of production value.
Yes.
They spent Netflix a series, lot of money on this. Netflix series. The robot design, especially, is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. It's this kind of cybernetic alien in a funny way. Mm-hmm. Like it's beautifully designed.
Yeah.
And, you know, intermittently compelling, and then very interestingly lacking. And some kind of colossal story holes in there.
Yeah.
Which was fascinating. And when we finished it, we were both trying not to kind of burst the bubble of the excitement around it while still expressing our reservations, I would say. Yes. And so, you know, it was a fascinating example of a kind of high concept show that nevertheless missed on a number of fundamentals and tried to hit, I think two fundamental things were, one, it tried to hit emotional beats with the characters before you cared about the characters.
Yes.
So this kind of early beat where they're trying to escape, I don't know, that's a spoiler or anything, but there's kind of a,
Let's just say some spoiler alerts coming up.
So I think for A, the cold open was stunning. Beautifully constructed. Really great. Sets up this kind of drama incredibly well.
Yes.
Like, really exceptional.
Yeah.
And shot beautifully and just great. So, like, the cold open was great. And then the kid, you know, these guys get dumped on the alien planet. And then the action starts to develop from there. But they tried to hit these kind of dramatic character beats right after the cold open. I'd say script-wise, kind of 3 or 4 pages after the cold open, with the dramatic music and the peril and the stuff, before you actually gave a damn about any of these characters. And so it fell totally flat. Like, it just didn't work as a beat. Whereas if that same thing had happened towards the end of it, you would have been far more involved with them and you would have been far more emotionally connected.
Hold that thought, like, where you're going, because I think that's an important side note in the story development, story breaking context, in that I think it's easy to think that, oh, like, we all have some sort of experience of, like, what it is to be afraid or to be in love, or, you know, it's like these sort of generic kind of human condition types of emotions. And so I think it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking, like, oh, like, this is a human condition or a human emotion, and so I can kind of get that going just based on the fact that we've all had this experience, without actually building the framework with these particular characters and these particular circumstances. And I think that's a thing that we see in a lot of cases where things fall flat. It's the, you can almost see the shortcut that the writers are taking with, I can get away with this because everybody is going to relate to this, without actually earning it in the context of this particular story. And I think that's something you have to be careful about.
Yeah, and obviously not to come back to kind of fanboying about Marvel, but it's a very much what they've done exceptionally well with the movies, is they've allowed the characters to be built up. So you genuinely, you are invested with these characters.
Yes.
And now you get to put them together in a movie, and you don't have to take the time to set them up.
Yeah.
Because
you've already done it. Yeah.
Over
10
years and 18 movies.
Exactly.
And so I think that was one of the issues with this.
Yeah.
And then B, it came, and then I think a big part of that was a structural problem where there is extensive use of flashbacks.
Yeah.
And flashbacks in and of themselves are definitely not bad. They can work very, very well.
Yeah.
Non-linear storytelling is not bad and can work incredibly effectively, but you've got to do it properly.
Yes.
And I think the problem they had was they were dotting in and out. They would try and tell this forward-moving story and then dotting back for little individual scenes, a couple of which were quite effective, like the dad appearing at the hedge with the thing and you get the setup.
Yeah.
And then they never actually fully explain why everyone is leaving Earth. They kind of imply in the background of some televisions that there's something going on.
Yeah, but you never quite clear about that. Yeah.
Which I feel like you probably should do in a pilot. Yes. What Kyler has said is that it gets explained further down the series, and I think that's a mistake.
I think so too.
I think you need to explain, like, setting up the story. A big part of that is, why are they doing this incredibly dangerous thing? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we're off the races.
Exactly.
As opposed to, we're going to have some television footage, some news footage playing in the background of a scene or two.
Yeah, yeah.
That never explains it. And then we're going to see some characters walking around in masks.
Well, let alone, like, why are these guys volunteering for this particular thing? So it's very murky as to why the characters are actually doing the thing that they're doing.
The thing that they're doing that sets up the story. Which was, so it was, whereas I think a more effective technique, and certainly, obviously, this has been done very well many times before, but it's the going, I think a better technique, a better solve to that problem would have been to have done the cold open in the way they did it, which was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And then backtrack the 2 or 3 years of the flashbacks and tell the story of the family leading up to the cold open and then spend the last act of the second half of the show.
Exactly.
Second half of the show, really. Telling the story on forward. I think that would have been a better overall would have made for a much more
This is something that I absolutely will not spend the time to do, but I would love if someone out there would actually just take the existing show and re-edit the pilot. Yes. Because I would be fascinated to see it told in a more linear fashion. Yes. And I very strongly suspect it would be a more effective show done in that format. So it's almost more an editing issue than it is anything else. It's like, you know, I'm sure it was written that way as well.
I'm sure it was. But
yeah. You know, it's like I think re-edited, it could actually be a more effective and compelling story. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, obviously love... I always like to be involved with what one's children are interested in. You kind of want to pay attention to that and look at that stuff. And then also have a kind of observational, objective perspective on their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of our job as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was great. So very happy to have seen it. I will definitely be watching some more of it with my son.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how it progresses. Yes.
We'll have to get a check-in in a future episode.
Exactly.
How that's resolved. Yeah. So, very interesting. I mean, I would say, you know, worth watching, but interesting as a both. I mean, let's not say that it's not entertaining, because it is entertaining.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. I think it is genuinely enjoyable.
It is genuinely entertaining, but I think in the context of creating story and breaking story and all that, it's an interesting exercise in kind of evaluating, like, yeah, there's something cool here, and with these few changes, it could have actually been more interesting, more compelling, kind of as a lead in to a longer story, series. Yeah,
exactly.
Very cool. So I think that's it for this week. Welcome to the new first episode of Mythmakers.
Exactly. Yeah.
We'll be back next week. You can follow along with everything that we're doing on all of the social medias at M2Action.
Yep.
Macroverse at Macroverse app.
Yep.
Both on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All on Macro. Yes. Macroverse app, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Exactly.
At M2Action.
Yep.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us on the web at M2Action.
M2.ninja
or Macroverse.media. For those two things, you can also contribute to what we're doing on Patreon, and we are still working on getting a Twitch stream going as well. So you can find us on Twitch.
One
right
of these
now
days, we'll get it right
at M2Action. I finally found the missing piece, so we'll get that set up shortly.
Very good. Yes,
but the channel exists at M2Action. If you want to go ahead and subscribe,
yep.
And for this show, you can now find us at Mythmakers on Apple Podcasts or Google Play or wherever you're listening to podcasts. And so if you do like this show, please do subscribe, rate, and review. That helps many other people find what we're up to and what this is all about, as well as helping spread the word to everything that we're up to. So
exactly.
Much appreciated. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.